This is Jared Muha. I'm here with Sister Gail on October 10th, and we'll be starting an oral history on black farm workers in Apopka, Florida. So Sister Gail, could you please explain what the Hope Community Center is and what role you've fulfilled in the organization?
Yes, the Hope Community Center is a nonprofit to serve the farm worker, low-income, and immigrant communities. And it is the current name of an organization that started in 1971, in the fall of 71, called the Office for Farm Worker Ministry. We were asked to come by the Bishop of Orlando to serve farm workers. The number of farm workers was large, and the bishop felt that there needed to be more people serving them in this area. People were already in Polk County, but nobody was up here in Orange County, Lake County, in the central area. So, and when we came, the agreement with the bishop was that we would not just serve Catholic farm workers, that we would serve farm workers what their needs were, not based on establishing churches or establishing missions, but that we would work with all farm workers. So, but out of that, over all these years, up to 2005, that is what we did. And then in 2005, we incorporated as a nonprofit that is still connected with the church, but separate nonprofit. And we still work with farm workers, and we've expanded to also low-income people and immigrants. So we serve through a great number of programs. I don't know if you even want to hear that. So I can give you a paper that tells you what all the programs are.
But, okay.
Yeah.
So if I understand correctly, then from 1971, fall of 1971 to 2005, the bulk of your work was farm worker justice, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, and you said that the bishop in the area is the one who invited you, and you said that was because there was a large farm worker population. Was that the only reason, though, or what about farm workers occurred to him, and then you, after coming here, that made him think this is a population that needs support?
Well, he saw from the work that he did and everything. He was a very personable man. And he saw from the work they were doing that there was a need. More and more Hispanics were coming into the area, and I think that's what triggered it for him. So that when we talked to him about taking the position, we said it would have to be all people, because we couldn't work in an area where there was, like, some people were being served and others weren't, and they all had the same problem. So that was an agreed-upon thing.
Okay. And was your work mainly in Apopka?
In the central Florida area. So it's Orange County, mostly west Orange County, northwest. Lake County, mostly south Lake County, and then we moved from that during the 80s to also include Volusia County.
Okay.
That's when, in the 80s, when we began to work with some of the farm workers to establish the Farm Worker Association, which began just in this area, Lake and Orange counties, but then now it's a statewide organization.
Okay.
Yeah.
So after having come in contact with the farm workers in this area, what initially struck you about their conditions? What was perhaps different than what you may have imagined?
Well, I probably didn't know much when I came. I knew when I came out of the boycotting area, boycotting Gallup wine and California lettuce, And I was a teacher, so I used to explain all that to my students, and they'd come with me on the picket lines to different stores, and we'd go to, and it was also the Vietnam time, so we went to demonstrations in Washington and all. So I really didn't know an awful lot about farm workers except what I heard when I went to big lectures. You know, Cesar Chavez came to our area twice, which was the Philadelphia area, and talked about the conditions and all. So it was all kind of theoretical. So when I came here, I saw what the reality was. And first time I went into Groves, it was like, oh, it looks simple, you know, just move this ladder. And I went to move the ladder, and of course I couldn't. Then you'd have a 10-year-old move the ladder for you, and you were like, oh my. And then to see people climbing up these ladders, which were very flimsy, or visually, but they bend. They weren't straight ladders.
They, okay.
And they leaned against the trees. But to be able to go up there and then to pick the fruit, and for me it was just, oh, you just pick it. And then I learned that if you don't pick it right, it won't regrow more fruit, you know. And the same thing out in the fields. We would go out on the fields to see the people, and it was hard work. You could see back-breaking. Sometimes some of the small planes that would do the spraying of the pesticides would follow our vans along the road and spray the vans, you know. And the people would be working on either side of the road. And so if you were out there watching over a period of time, you'd see they'd spray this part of the field, and sure, they wouldn't spray the workers directly all the time, but right next to the place they were spraying, people were working, so when the wind shifted, they got it. So you'd see that too, and then you'd hear people talk about the wages. I guess the wages maybe was the first thing that really struck me. How crew leaders, which was the system in Florida, how crew leaders played black and Hispanic workers against each other. You know, like, look, I'd pay you all, he'd say to the black workers, maybe 50 cents more. Or, no, he'd say to them, well, I'd pay you more, but, you know, those Hispanics will work for so much less, so I can't really pay you much more than I'm doing now, because I'm paying you more, but they're working for less. Then he'd go to work with the crew leader from the Hispanic community, and he'd say the same darn thing. Well, you know, I'm paying, those blacks will work for less, but, so I'm paying you really more than I'm paying them, so I can't keep going up, you know. And it was a lie in both cases, because if people didn't talk to each other, they didn't know the languages, so right. People were played off against each other. And when you began talking to people and finding that out, you were like, oh, well, if people could begin to get together and talk, it'd be different. And the same thing happened with government programs. There'd be a government program that would come in that, because of the way it was structured, only really citizens of this country could apply for. But not even just citizens, like the black community and the poor white community could apply for. Right. But then there'd be another program that, because of the way it was phrased and everything, it was dealt for migrants, and of course the other community was here all the time. So then they could apply for that, but the people who lived here all the time couldn't. So you watch the government programs even play people off against each other. And when you saw what people were being paid, it was like, you're kidding, you know. And then just even going out to, like, we had a lot of carrot houses here. vegetables on the muck, and the carrot houses, the speed at which they had to work when the carrots came down the belt, and if you wanted to be fast, you had to grab them, and people would get the carrots under their fingernails. It really hurts if you get stuff under your fingernails. And they would get that, and they'd sell them gloves, but the gloves were so flimsy that, you know, after an hour or two, the stuff went right through the fingers, and so that continued. So a lot of the working conditions, people had to work out on the fields, even if it was raining. I mean, you didn't get to stop if you wanted to make a decent wage.
Right.
And if you were working in when there was lightning, it was rare that you were told you could stop and get out of the way. Mm-hmm. So all those kinds of things, it was like you were being treated as someone said, a discardable individual. You know, well, if something happened to you, there's more behind you, you know. In fact, there was a document, and I can't remember the grower who said it, but he said, our workers are just like paper cups. They can be used and disposed of, and we can get another one. You know, and that kind of, for many of the companies, not all, you can never say all, but you always can find the one who's better than the others. But for many of the companies and the crew leaders, the attitude was, I'm in a better place than you, so I don't care what your conditions are. And that was, so.
And how did you come to learning about all this? Was it what you were noticing and observing, or was this what the farm workers were telling you? Or what makes it both?
Both. Okay. Yeah. Because people, you know, when you just be talking to people, they tell you stories, and they show you their paychecks. You know, you could see what they were being paid, and then if you were around and noticed what was happening either in the groves or out on the muck or even in the nurseries, which were not as prevalent at that time, but if you just observed, you could see what was going on.
So you mentioned earlier that, you know, so you came to Central Florida in 1971, and at the time there was a population of Latino folks coming from the South to Florida, and that is what prompted, in some way, your coming here. And I'd like to pick up on that now. So could you explain what a typical farm in Apopka in the area looked like in the early 1970s?
Okay, I came actually in 75. A group came in late 71, but okay. I was not in that group. I came in 75.
Okay, my apologies.
My personal, no, that's just, I didn't say it, though.
Okay.
Yeah, but, it depends on what kind of crop you were talking about. The groves were enormous. In fact, you could drive from here on 436 all the way down to the airport, and it was just groves and groves and groves most of the way down. Same thing on 441. There was no traffic light until you hit Lee Road, and Apopka had one traffic light, and all the way down the road was groves. And then you had and those were mostly bigger companies, although there were small versions of that. People had some acres from their family, and you know, so there was no one way it looked. And some of those companies had housing, and some didn't. So, and that complicated the issue, because if you wanted to strike about your wages and you were living in their housing, which was not anything to write home about, trust me, that you were hamstringed to do it. And then there was the fields fewer workers worked out on the fields in carrots and radishes, but there were a lot of other crops out there, all different kind of leaf vegetables, all different kinds of, you know, like cabbage and kale, and I mean just every, you know, all kinds of stuff. And if you were out on the fields, again, there were maybe, and I'm just guessing this, I don't know the exact number, but I think maybe like around 8 to 10 bigger companies out around Lake Apopka. And then there were some smaller ones. And and they started after World War II, what they started during World War II with German prisoners of war, producing vegetables for the troops. And they learned during that time how to vaporize the water, you know, after they were done cleaning the vegetables. I don't know, again, if this is the right wording, but vaporize the water so that they wouldn't be starting to rot, which enabled them to be kept for a longer period of time. And so I'm guessing 8 to 10 companies around the lake, and maybe some more smaller ones. Then, and some of them were huge, like Aduda and Sons, which I heard it say that if you did Aduda and Sons property in agriculture at that time, and strung it around the world, it would, at the equator, it would match. I mean, it would meet. I mean, they had enormous amount of agricultural property throughout the state.
Yeah.
And other places, Australia, mm-hmm. other places. Mm-hmm. So then there were small nurseries for houseplants and landscaping. So there was all that. And then there were fern companies where the fern that you put in cut flowers when you get bouquets and stuff. I know you don't, but when they always put the little ferns in,
right?
You know what they are.
Yep.
So then there were some of them. Now, over the years, the number of nurseries went up through the roof, and even the ferneries increased here, but the biggest ferneries were over in Volusia County, in a place called Pearson. Pearson is the fern capital of the world. That's their title as you go in. Apopka is the indoor foliage capital of the world. And so those were big things and became so big here. I mean, you can just drive up 44, 41 and see on either side of the road signs for one company after another, you know. And the recession has hit them hard, but other than that. So that's a general idea, and just the different kind of crops and the size of the companies.
And as for you know, the relations among the workers on these farms, I know you said that there isn't like a standard kind of model for how a farm looks, but could you speak to what you noticed and what you heard from the farm workers about you know, the relations among different people, different populations, and how they perceived what their work condition was like, environment was like.
Not sure I understand totally what you're asking, but so if I don't answer it, you can say that. But as I said before, people didn't really know each other, mm-hmm. and the operations went through crew leaders for the outside work, they were the ones that negotiated with the companies what the pays and all would be. In the groves, people had little, I don't know what I could say, little, not knowledge, but little ways to get the information as to really what did the crew leader and the boss say in the negotiation. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, we've heard from people that they found out that the crew leader, for example, had negotiated with the company for, let's say, 40 cents a bin of oranges, or 45. And then for the crew leader, he negotiated himself another, let's say, 10 cents a bin. When you go to the people, he might say, you know, all I could get for you was 40 cents. But he was going to be getting, he took the 5 cents away that would have given people 45, right. And he added it to his own. Mm-hmm. And there was no way of anybody ever knowing. Right. What did he negotiate? You know? So there was that. It was less of crew leader style in the inside work. But people were not happy many times with what they were being paid. Even if they were in groves, you might go to the grove at 6 in the morning, but if the bins weren't there yet, if it was a new grove, the bins weren't there yet, you might wait 2 hours for the crew leader to come with all the equipment. Mm-hmm. You don't get paid for that. Mm-hmm. You only get paid for the bin that you pick. And it's been proven that what they say is a full bin is really the equivalent of 2 extra bins. So instead of being, I think it's 10 or 12, it was really 2 more than that.
Right.
So people knew they weren't getting paid properly.
Right.
You know, but they didn't have many vehicles to deal with it. They'd have smaller strikes of a crew in the field. You know, they'd just say, no, we're not doing any more today until you change it. Maybe it's bad trees. And so you know you're not going to get as much fruit out of it. So they say, no, this is a bad grove. You've got to raise what you're paying us for that. Then I lost any more of your question in my head. So
no, that was good. Thank you. And you know, I know you said earlier, too, that crew leaders often pitted racial populations against one another.
Yeah.
What I'm wondering, just after that story, did the way that crew leaders treated different, you know, workers of different ethnic backgrounds, did that vary? Was that different between black and Hispanic farm workers?
You'd have to ask farm workers that.
Okay.
My observation is they treated them all pretty bad. You know, maybe in some cases where people lived in a community together, like in the black community, maybe the crew leaders were a little better because they had to go back and live next door to people. Maybe in the Hispanic community where they came from the same village and therefore you could go home and ruin their reputation. Maybe that was, they treated them a little better.
Okay.
But really, I don't remember ever hearing people say, you know, we really got a good crew leader. And I'm sure they did, but, you know, I didn't hear it, you know. There was always complaints about, you know, the way they were treated. And sometimes, actually, much of it was the company, too, especially in the vegetables. You know, even if the crew leader tried to get better stuff, the company would just say, that's it. You know, you want your crew to work? That's it. You know, so.
Cool. So as far as black farm workers in Apopka and broader Central Florida are concerned. Do you know how most of them came to that line of work? How they came to be farm workers in the area?
Probably not, but I can tell you what I think. People came here from Alabama, Georgia, maybe some Mississippi, but mostly a lot of the people that I met came from Alabama and Georgia, mm-hmm. and the Carolinas. And people came here. Some people came here to do turpentine. You know, tap the trees for turpentine. It was a big industry at one point, early on. People came here for the railroad. And I think, even as I read books, the orange industry was a gradual, you know, thing. Mm-hmm. But it came before the vegetables and the other stuff. The vegetables really came during the World War II, when they decided to drain pieces of the lake. That was like the leavings of a prehistoric glaciers. And I mean, everybody always says, you look at the soil and the muck, and all you have to do is throw a seed in it, look at it, and it grows. I mean, it's like very fertile soil. Mm-hmm. But in World War II, as I said, when they needed food for the troops, fresh food, they decided to do that. I don't know any dates, but... And so they drained part of the lakes, mm-hmm. and they... And I don't know if the companies ever paid for the use of it or any of that, but the reality is they started to grow a lot of vegetables. Mm-hmm. And then when they found a way to keep them from rotting, it just became a bigger and bigger industry. And initially, as I said, German prisoners of war worked out on the Lake Apopka. And when the war was over, then black farm workers took that over. And there would probably have been some Hispanics, mostly Mexican-Americans, who came here. What the percentage is, I don't know. But I know there were, for years, Mexican-American bars, you know, around to cater to that community. But mostly it was black farm workers. Not just from here, but people came from South Florida and other parts of the state to do that work. And they lived in rental housing if they didn't own their own housing. It wasn't until the 80s that a large influx of Hispanics came. And I noticed that you did say something in there about Hispanics replacing African Americans. And I think one of the issues was the last generation that I saw that really worked out on the fields was a generation that probably, I'm trying to estimate age, but like probably would now be in their 60s. Most of the younger people didn't want to work out there, although some did, but a large percentage of them found other kinds of jobs. One thing happened, a juice plant developed in Plymouth, which was right next door, and it was better paying, indoor work, not so backbreaking. So when that when the juice plant opened, a lot of people in the black community went to work there, and they were paid better, as I said, better working conditions. So that's one of the things that diverted some of the black community from working out in the fields. Eventually, through some, I won't say this on tape, but the juice plant closed. And a lot of those workers lost their jobs. few went back into the fields or the groves, but most sought other kind of work with different companies, because by then Disney was here. Disney came in 71, so by then different companies were here and different places had opened up to work, not just in the tourist industry, but also in other companies that came down here, because it became like a fertile place for industries to relocate.
Okay. So if I'm following you correctly, I mean, one of the reasons you think there was a shift in racial populations was because there were new opportunities,
mm-hmm.
and
yes.
that many of the black farm workers, or many of the people that would become black farm workers, perhaps before you came here, likely got into that line of work because it was a good opportunity for them, you think?
Yes, the new kind of work.
Right.
Yeah. And so it wasn't just that people came and replaced them as much as there was a vacuum, and they filled that vacuum.
Okay. And do you think that former black farm workers today, or perhaps if there are still people, perhaps in their 70s or 80s who are still farming today, or acting as farmhands, do you think they would say the same as what you just said?
I don't know. I really don't know. They may feel that their jobs were taken. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that even if you went to the carrot houses, they were working together. I mean, they weren't crews like there were outside. They were mixed, so there were Hispanics and African Americans all working on the lines in the carrot houses and stuff. So I don't know if any of them ever thought of why, because I don't think I ever asked them. But I think for a lot of them, they'd say they don't want to work that hard. They don't want to be. That it's too hard to work. And also because of the pesticide exposure, I think many families discouraged their youth from working out in the fields, because a number of them have had children who have had debilitating diseases. Lupus is very prevalent around the Popka area, and that can come from exposure to pesticides. And a number of other diseases, they've done research on Lake Apopka, on the alligators there, and their reproductive organs are shrunk or ruined. Their new alligators were malformed, and they apparently have one of the closest biological network that we humans do. So there was a lot of that kind of stuff, of people discouraging, I think, their children from, I don't want my children doing hard work like I'm doing. One generation always wants the next generation to do better, and that's true for everybody. And so I would guess they encouraged them to stay in school, because a lot of the farm workers, the older ones that I knew, hadn't finished high school. Some of the younger ones had, but not a lot of the older ones. Maybe they were lucky they finished elementary, So.
Okay. So I mean, so you think there were a few causes of, the shift in the dominant population,
mm-hmm.
in
yeah.
the farm workers.
Yeah.
And you would say that much of it was because of, exposure to pesticides and unfair work, as well as an opportunity to do better.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
with the increase of other companies coming here, people had more options.
Okay.
Because in the beginning, there just weren't that many options here. And the other thing is, Central Florida has a history of racism, a very strong history. of the Klan. We have a county, Lake County, where the sheriff was elected for, what, I don't know, 10 terms or something, Willis McCall, controlled a lot of the mentality of the white owners. I mean, it was the Klan there. So even if you didn't subscribe to the plan, you had to be a hardy individual to buck something that they wanted done. And so people who worked there for companies from there had were not only controlled by the company, but the Klan saw that your worker did something, was too uppity or whatever the words are, you know, didn't toe the line, they would go to the companies and say, we're taking so-and-so to teach him a lesson, you know, it's your worker and you better see the distance. So they'd either take the owner and the worker or whatever. And they had a place called the Stomping Grounds, and they stomped people. So, not to mention the other things they did, whip them and stuff. So, you know, that, I don't think we can underestimate how strong the racism is here, that controlled what some owners, how some owners may have treated their workers. And I think that could have easily discouraged some people from wanting to do that kind of work.
So it seems like from what you're saying, I mean, there were a lot of forces discouraging black farm workers from staying in that profession and from their kids wanting to inherit that type of position. I'm wondering, do you know of, and what do you think about black farm workers who perhaps didn't pursue that, though, who stayed in that line of work and who, you know, for as long as the farm's open in Lake Apopka, you know, what do you think, how do you think that the shift occurring among racial populations affected their work and their attitude?
I don't get it.
Okay.
Let me just say something, and then it's not what you meant. Some people liked what they did. They didn't like what they were paid, they didn't like how they were treated, but they liked what they did. So even when the farms were starting to close, you couldn't convince some people that they were going to close because the owners would say no. I mean, why would we close this? We're making money and all this. And I think it was what they knew to do, it was what they liked to do, and they really didn't have the skill to do other things to start with. So for many of them, they did stay in the jobs for, let's say, on the muck for a long, long time, up until they got their pink slip. Surprise, surprise.
Right
before Christmas. Thank you very much. So, is that what you meant?
Yeah.
But then the state did when they got pushed to do a retraining. Yeah. Do you know anything about the sale of the property and all that?
The sale of
the muck land and all that?
I don't.
Now, Jeannie will tell you a good deal about that. And get her to, because it's a context in which it all goes. And some of them did take classes afterwards to try and upgrade their skills. But for some of them, they had so far to go, it was discouraging, you know. And they needed an income while they did that. And the income that was presented to them wasn't really a real live person income, you know. So, again, it discouraged people from learning new skills and everything else. So,
right.
Yeah.
So for those that did stay, what you're talking about, did you see, or have you seen how, you know, a higher proportion of Hispanic farm workers in the groves or on the, in the fields, how did that affect their work, do you know?
Well, once they decided to close all the fields, there was nobody going to be working. Mm-hmm. So people had to go find other things. For the groves, when we had the three freezes of the 80s, 83, 85, and 89, I think that's what the years, the owners of the groves sold them for development around here and moved south. So unless the black farm workers wanted to leave their families and go south, there weren't that many groves left. There are groves, but compared with before, very small, very small. So that was another thing that changed. So even though a lot of black farm workers worked in the groves, when they all went away, I mean, we're talking about really south, down in Bonita Springs, that whole area down there, Macaulay, that whole area. We were the north end of the oranges and the grapefruit. Actually, we had no grapefruit up here, first few of the oranges. And so when all the groves went, you know, you didn't have an option of other work to do up here, except for the few groves that remained. Mm-hmm. And some workers still work over, they work over on the beach near Cape Canaveral and stuff, some of the older pickers, that's still going on. Mm-hmm. But it just is way down from what it used to be, way down.
Okay.
Is that what you were asking?
Yeah, that's a fine answer.
Mm-hmm.
So
there were a lot of other factors, I guess is what I'm saying, right, that went into the black community leaving farm work here.
Right.
Weather and pollution, because mm-hmm. yeah, it was the way the growers polluted Lake Apopka. Lake Apopka used to be the premier bass fishing lake in the state. People came from all over the country to fish in Lake Apopka. Now, if you put your hand in, here's the surface, and you put your hand down here, you're lucky if you see your hand.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they ruined the whole lake. And it was them not doing anything with the runoff, and it was the state not knowing to do something mm-hmm. to force them to do mm-hmm. the runoff. Right. But companies have a lot of power in Tallahassee, so mm-hmm. it's also got something to do with it.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, having looked back on all this now, do you think black farm workers have been included or remembered in Florida history?
Well, they've been remembered by those of us who pay attention to them. There is a... do you know about Crealdy School of Art in Winter Park? Well, we and the Farm Worker Association have worked a lot with Schreier. I've just lost his first name. David? No. Is it?
I'm not sure.
My God, I can't believe I don't remember his name. Anyway, it'll come to me. But anyway, he's the director, and he's done a lot of photography projects out here. In fact, the ministry has done probably four with him. And in conjunction with the Farm Worker Association, they did one called The Last Harvest. And they interviewed workers, they took pictures of families, etc. And it's now in the archives of the state. And I understand that The Last Harvest is showing in Winter Garden at this time. So you might want to go there and see it. I'm not sure exactly what buildings, but it's over there, which is kind of miraculous for Winter Garden, because like all the other cities here, they wanted the people to work, but they didn't want them to live here, you know, like, because they're disruptive people, and, you know, we don't. you know, they ruin the city, meaning for the white people. There have been a number of things that happened in Winter Garden where even there was one event, Sister Anne, who you've met, when she made her final vows, she wanted to have the reception in the city in the thing on the lake where they used to have a lot of the receptions and stuff. And we actually had tapes of their meeting, of the city council meeting, that said, oh, Sister Anne asked for the reception for a big thing she's having. What do you think we should do? Well, you know they're going to bring those farm workers in, and we know we don't want them. They're so rowdy and they're blah, 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 all this stuff about that. And they actually said it on the tapes of the city council meeting. Yeah. So, I mean, that's been the attitude of, and the attitude here in Apopka has been, because we did, Apopka lost a major federal lawsuit brought by members of the black community to improve sewer, water, paving, lights, and they even lied about the stuff that was the designs, the engineering papers that just at the very end of the trial, it was, you need 6-inch pipes down the street and then small pipes go off of that. And people would say, oh, we used to have local food stores here, and they'd meet each other. Well, I guess I better be going now, because as they talk to each other, because I turned the water on for a bath before I left home, so by now there ought to be enough in there that maybe I can get a bath. And one of the people in the city happened to say, oh, well, that's because they only have 2-inch pipelines down the street. And the lawyer said, but it shows 6-inch pipelines. No 6-inch pipelines in the black community. So they were 2-inch. And so most of the black community there were in farm work. So it all influences how people felt they were treated. You know, it's not separate. You know, the way they were treated in the towns have a lot to do also with how they felt about not being people of importance. May seem like it's irrelevant, but to me, it's all package, you know. So,
well, thank you so much. Is there anything you want to say that wasn't asked, or anything you want to bring up pertaining to this topic?
I think it might be nice for you to go to the Apopka Museum. I'm trying to work up enough courage that I'm not nasty when I go in. But apparently there's the entire room is all what the white people have done. And then there's like a piece of the wall they tell me about this, well, like from here to here, that even alludes to the black community.
Just a small portion on a wall.
Yeah, I mean, it just gives you a glimpse. And when we had demonstrations here in town for the sewer and for the water and all that, and I remember the mayor saying, Sister, we were going to do those things, but y'all just wanted us to move too fast. I said, well, Mayor, this is the 80s, and civil rights came in the 60s, and I think 20 years is not moving. No, but it's people coming from the outside who see there's a different thing. The other thing that happened here was people moved into Apopka. And this is just of the black community. The 441 divided the white and black community. Literally. I don't know if you've ever driven on the black side of town, but literally. After the railroad tracks, there were two blocks where there were businesses, and then the railroad tracks. And for most of the city, that divided white from black. And in fact, in Apopka in the 30s, people were starting to integrate. And at that time, the city council passed a whatever ordinance law, I don't know what it was called, that any whites who owned land below the railroad tracks, I'm sure they phrased it differently, could rent it, but they couldn't live there. Because people were living side by side. And any blacks who owned land on the white side of town had to sell it, because neither they could live there or rent it. So it totally segregated a public in the 30s. And you can see that segregation still going on. And again, it's all a piece of the same thing. It's, you know, you do farm work. People would say, oh, I lock my doors when I drive through south of Apopka to get to Winter Garden. Because in the old days, that's the way you used to go. Really? Why? Well, you know, it's a dangerous part of town. Really? I live there. Oh, well, aren't you scared? No. You know, it's the whole... So when you're treated like that way for a long time, I don't know, you begin to get the impression that that's the way it's always going to be. And young people didn't want to take that. A lot of young people left this community. A lot of them. A lot of the young kids that were in, as I said, we lived in the black community, a lot of young kids on our street left. And the ones that stayed got into drugs, got into other stuff. Not all, but too many.
Right.
You know? So it's another reason, you know. Kids didn't want to do the hard work that their parents did with nothing to show for it. And they wanted to do something that would give them more dignity. You know? Although farm workers sometimes say that I have the most wonderful job in the nation. I feed you. Without me, what would you do? You know, so. But, yeah. So, that's it for the month.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. This is concluding the interview, October 10th, 2014.